Hi, it's Bob Wells here, and welcome to another edition of Undercurrent Stories. Thinking back to when you were a child, did you ever have a particular passion or interest? Did it fade away as life took over, making a living, etc.? And is it something that you've been meaning to get back to? Well, if that's the case, and you'd like some inspiration, I think you'll really enjoy this episode. It features award-winning British watercolour artist David Poxton. You'll hear advice on how to get started, how artistic communities offer support, inspiration, and the opportunities for artists to connect. You'll hear how art can provide emotional and therapeutic benefits, particularly during tough times. And you'll also hear about the sheer joy of creating something. These principles that David talks about are really useful. You can apply them to any creative pursuit, whether that be art, writing, music, anything. So I really hope that you enjoy this episode and get something out of it. Hello and welcome to Undercurrent Stories. In today's show, I'm joined by David Poxton. David is a highly sought-after international watercolour artist. He is an elected member of the Royal Institute of Painters in Watercolours and a signature member of the National Watercolour Society of America. In addition to this, David is the organiser of the 2024 International Watercolour Masters Show, which is taking place in Shropshire, England, in May. To give you an idea of what David's art looks like, which I really love, here's a quote that David put out a few weeks ago, which I think sums it all up. "Remnants of the historic past, discarded workplaces, a rich socio-rural industrial mix where nature is busy reclaiming that which man has abandoned or cast aside existence. These are the subjects that give me the greatest joy, and replicating them in pure watercolour gives me all the painterly challenges I require. Watercolour is the easiest medium to start with, but the hardest one to master." Hello and welcome to the show, David.
Hello, Bob, and thank you very much for inviting me to your podcast. Very nice to be here, and hello to all your listeners from all over the world.
That's fantastic. Great to have you on. Before we talk about your art, and in particular the show that's coming up, David, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself, how you sort of got into art and your life's journey? I think that would be a good opportunity for listeners to hear how you got into it.
Okay, with pleasure. So my particular art journey started when I was about 4 years old. I was raised in a very industrial part of Wolverhampton, surrounded by steel factories, coal mines, and lots of industry, lots of smoke, fog, smog, and areas of great deprivation, actually. Having said that, I had a very happy childhood. There wasn't any issues with that. I don't think I saw a tree till I was 10. So my world was very grey. Everything around me was covered in dust, basically. Now, when I was 4, my grandmother, who lived next door, bought me a tin of De La Rowney watercolours, a small tin of watercolours, a tin I've still got somewhere. And this... Nobody in my family was an artist. Nobody knew anything about art. Nobody knew what to do with watercolours. But I had this tin, opened it up, and it was like a jewel case. There were these amazing colours in there. I'd never seen so many colours all in one place. And at that moment, my love for watercolour painting was born, even though I hadn't got the faintest idea what to do with it. We knew that it was something to do with water. So obviously I had a jar of water, took the goldfish out first, and one little brush. My parents cut up pieces of old wallpaper into foot square wallpaper, and I had a mountain of this wallpaper. And on those sheets of wallpaper, I practiced my painting. Now, my father was a vegetable merchant. And his job was, he had a lorry, his truck. His job was to travel to farms out in the countryside and collect loads of potatoes and cabbages and all the other stuff. And sometimes he would take me with him. So that is where I saw tractors and farm machinery and the great outdoors, really. And that's where my love of tractors was born. So the treat of the day was for the farmer to let me sit on the tractor and bounce up and down, and sometimes I even got to go on the tractor up and down a field, not driving it, just as a passenger. I just loved it, the great four-wheeled at the front, the chimney chugging out smoke. It was brilliant. And they were all such fantastic colours as well. Nothing looked new. Everything was very old, worn, used. They were beasts of burden, and they had their own characters, and I just loved it all. So I had a twin love, watercolour painting, which I was trying to learn how to do, and tractors and farm machinery. So when I'd get home, of course, I was trying to draw and paint tractors. Now, it's true, isn't it, that most children, when they're little, before they can even write, they will try to replicate the world around them with a pencil or a bit of chalk or charcoal and make marks. And they don't need much encouragement to keep going, you know. They're trying to draw their mum or their dad or their cat. And somewhere along life's journey, most of them lose that enthusiasm for drawing and painting. A few of us keep it and keep it up. Of course, along the way, we have to earn a living and make our way and everything else, and life's journey quite often gets in the way of the things that we love to do. However, I've always done painting, although, of course, I've had to work for a living as well, and had quite a hectic life along the way. So that's where it started for me. I kept it going all through my life so far. And even now, after all these years, when I am faced with a new piece of paper stretched onto a board, I get the feeling, the same excitement that I did when I was 4 years old. It's just stayed with me. Now, someone told me a long time ago that if you love what you do, whatever that is in life, whether it's painting, making music, dancing, writing, anything creative, if you love what you do and you do it for long enough, you might get quite good at it. Somewhere along the way, somebody might pay you to do it, which is fantastic. But the main thing is, never lose the love that you first felt for that pursuit. If you lose that, you may as well go and do something else. So, and I love watercolour painting. Even now, after all these years, I just love it. Can't wait to get into my studio. I'm happiest there, going off into an artistic zone, which anybody that paints or draws or plays music will know. Time stands still when you're in that rehearsal room or in that studio, wherever you are. Time stands still when you're doing something you love.
Well, that's a great introduction there, and I can empathise completely with that. I mean, my grandchildren, as soon as you give them a bit of paper and a pencil or a felt tip pen or whatever, they're straight on there. And I remember drawing as a kid, you know, and you're quite right. At some point, it goes away. I don't know whether it's down to sort of doing officially art classes at school, but something stops you doing it, doesn't it? It's quite interesting, though.
Yeah, it's when you we go to school, if we're lucky, and of course they're trying to fill our heads with all sorts of other stuff, arithmetic, writing, geography. I don't know if they still do that stuff now, but they did when I was at school, and other things come along, like playing football, cricket, learning to play an instrument. A little bit later on, the opposite sex, of course, is a fascinating subject to study. And all these things clutter up your life so that that thing that you started off with, when there's just you on your own with a pile of bits of paper and you're scribbling away and drawing, there's all these other things in the way. Mm. And, of course, some of them are very interesting and perhaps even more exciting than just sitting there drawing. And so off you go in different directions. And, you know, that's part of the rich tapestry of being human beings, isn't it? There is no end to the creativity of human beings, whether they're scientists or artists, musicians, actors, or podcaster.
It's the creativity, isn't it, David? David, you know, the actual, when you finish a painting, the feeling of feeling and then the sort of compliments you get from having done a painting, is that what you do it for? Is it the journey and the process in the meantime, or is it both?
Well, I am happiest when I'm creating a painting. So it's a relationship. And it's a little bit like a relationship with a girlfriend or a guy or whatever. So you meet a new person, you have an attraction, you maybe fall in love, you go on a little relationship journey, and then one day maybe it's over. You get dumped or whatever happens to you. Not always, of course some last forever. However, making paintings, I feel, is the same thing. Because you start off, you love that subject. You want to get into the fabric of the materials that have made that piece of metal. Really get into the DNA of it and try to challenge yourself to recreate that texture onto a piece of paper. Now, my paintings, they can take weeks to make because I'm not in a rush. Speed in painting to me is ridiculous because it's like having a really nice dinner. Why would you want to rush it? You just take your time and enjoy it and the people you're with. And it's the same with me with painting. So once you get into that zone, you're lost in that space and it's a beautiful place to be. Whatever problems you've got happening in the outside world, they're irrelevant while you are painting. In that way, it's very therapeutic, which is why a lot of people who've been ill or in hospital or having issues in their life, they turn to art and painting because it's something they can do on their own. They don't need anybody else around them. They're not relying on anybody else. They can just sit there or stand and just get lost in that creative process, a little bit like getting a guitar and playing away. So that's the thing is that you're painting away and then suddenly the painting tells you it's finished. It's over. Leave me alone. Go away. And every painting has that moment and you don't know when it's going to come. It's very odd. And that's why, to me, it's like a relationship with another human. You know, they suddenly they don't want to speak to you anymore or something, or they're fed up listening to you. And it's over. Now, sometimes you can try and force yourself to carry on. It's fatal because then you overwork it. You get into an argument with the painting. And that's no good. You want to maintain that beautiful feeling that you had when you are creating it. I feel when I'm painting that I'm actually rebuilding the subjects on the paper. To me, they are not just a surface impression. It's something else going on. So I'm actually delving into the fabric of the paper, and I use very thick paper, which takes a lot of abuse. I have a range of techniques that I've developed over the years, which are peculiar to me, where there are no off limits with me with trying to replicate texture on the paper. Having said that, I don't use collage or any other kind of paints apart from pure watercolor paints. I don't use any white paint and I don't use any black paint. Any whites that you see in my work is actually the white of the paper. So when I'm faced with a new subject, a piece of paper, my first task is to decide what parts of that piece of white paper I'm going to preserve as white paper. And I have a range of things I do. I might put some bits of paper over it to protect it, or a thing that we use in painting is called masking fluid, which is a kind of rubbery, horrible stuff that you can put that on, wait for it to dry, then you can rub it off and the white paper comes back. I do that. So I'm a pure watercolor painter. Obviously, I use brushes, but I also use my hands a lot, my fingers, screwdriver, anything that comes to hand that I feel I can make an impression with that paint and that paper. It's almost like it's a sport to me. It's a physical and mental and emotional journey, each painting. Now, you never know when you start. You might love the subject and you might try to paint it. You never know if it's going to be a successful painting. What is a successful painting? Well, if you end up at the end of it and you still love the subject when you as you did when you started it, eventually it might make its way, get its clothes on, which is its frame and mount and everything and glass in front of it, and it might make its way into an exhibition. And the payoff is if you're standing there and somebody looks at your painting and they are physically moved, emotionally moved by what they see before them. That is the ultimate payoff. At that moment, you can see, and I've had people burst into tears standing in front of some of my paintings, not because they hate it so much, but because it takes them to somewhere, a moment in their lives that has been particularly meaningful, changed the course of their history, done something to them, and that takes them right back to that emotional, sensitive moment to touch those nerve ends in the viewer. The painting then transcends a mere visual experience, and it goes into another world where you, the painting, and the viewer, and hopefully maybe they want to buy it as well to live with it forever, you are on in a special place, and somehow you create a special bond with that viewer, which remains forever. So I meet people at shows who maybe bought a painting 30 years ago and still have that painting, and they see me, we have a chat, and we're right back to that moment that they first saw that painting. It's great.
You share a special bond. What I really like about your paintings, David, is this, and we were talking before we went on air about ghost signs, you know, old advertising signs where over a period of time, the original writing or font or whatever has been discolored by the sun, wind and rain, and just sheer age. And it almost sort of goes back into time as to when it was first done. And it's, I think it's with your paintings, you know, all that stuff that you do to the painting on top of the very strong, you know, canvas itself, you're almost putting that age into the subject, aren't you?
Yeah. Things that have worked hard for a living. I mean, I've brought up in with a working family with a very strong work ethic, and I've got that work ethic. I love to work, although my work is painting, but I don't feel it's work. It's what I do. And the subjects that I am drawn to, I feel they've worked for a living as well. They've worked. They've got battle scars. They've got the knocks. They've been through a few hedges. All the things that happen to us in our lives, the good days, the bad days, the winter, the summer, and the spring and the autumn, are etched into the fabric of the subjects I paint, just as they are with us as humans, good days, bad days. One of my favourite kind of subjects to paint are old doors. Now, doors tell a story. They represent the arriving or the leaving in life's journey. That from the privacy of in the house or in the workplace, and you open that door, you step through it into another world, and suddenly you feel different. Quite often people have a different perspective when they're outside their house, a different appearance and character to when they're in their house. And then later they may return to that house, and there are good days and bad days. And all the emotions and the DNA of the people that pass through those portals, I feel, are in the fabric of those doors, especially doors with peeling paint, rusting door furniture, stuff like that. All the people that have touched those handles, they've been in a good mood, a bad mood, whatever mood they've been in, and that's transmitted into those inanimate objects. But to me, they're not inanimate. Just like tractors are not inanimate. I mean, some of the greatest painters in the world paint portraits. Some of them are absolutely fantastic, brilliant, Rembrandt, people like that. My subjects, I feel, they are portrait. They're my version of portraits. When I paint a tractor, I'm not painting a tractor. I'm painting a person that is actually a tractor who's shared thousands of miles up and down furrows in fields with a farmer in all weathers. And the tractor begins to look like the farmer and vice versa. You know,
yeah, and I think with the tractor's a good one, isn't it? Because, you know, you've got the 16-year-old boy in 1935 on the tractor, and then you've got him as a 75-year-old later on, yeah, on that very same tractor and all same the miles tractor. He's done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where I live now, I'm quite fortunate, having made my way upstream, I think, a little bit. I live in the countryside and surrounded by a field and got my studio. And the farmers around here were quite curious when I first came here about 16 years ago as to what I was doing in this place. And so they'd stop. Some of them would stop, jump off their tractor and come in and into the studio and see what I was doing. And they could see my love for these beasts, just as they have love, although farmers are renowned for not really demonstrating emotion particularly, you know. But there's three or four farmers around where I live who love what I do so much that they've given me the run of their farmyards, wow, and barns and everything. So I can go anytime when the light is right, because the light has to be right for me to get into that sort of zone. I can go when I'm going on subject hunting trips, and I go and no problem, find subjects there, do a quick drawing, take some photos and everything else. Near where I live, there's a guy who actually fixes all the farmers' tractors. He's got this great big yard. It's a fascinating place. And there are tractors in various states of disintegration or rebirth, depending on what the perspective is. And because a lot of these tractors are 60, 70, 80 years old, they don't make the parts anymore. Mm. So he has to take parts out of other tractors, adapt them, do things to them to get them going. One of the tractors he showed me had a bit of an old Spitfire engine in it.
No.
Yeah, to get it going, you know, it was incredible. So there is no their resourcefulness to make stuff happen. It has to happen. That crop has to come in when it has to come in, otherwise yeah, it's wrecked. Yeah. Everything has to happen. The show must go on, as it must go on in rock and roll. Whatever you have to do to make it happen,
yeah,
you make it happen. There's no negotiation in rock and roll, and there's no negotiation for farmers.
And just on the subject of rock and roll, I can see is it a gold disc behind you?
Yes.
Tell us about that, David.
Well,
I know we're changing the subject a bit, but I had to say something.
Yeah, well, so part of my having to earn a living for it. So I take you back in time. So when I was a young teenager, and discovered music, of course, became obsessed with music, got myself a guitar, became as obsessed with learning to play the guitar as I was trying to learn to paint with watercolour, and, you know, got to a kind of working standard with the guitar, not great, but, you know, I could knock a tune out. And then, you know, within about 6 weeks, was in a band. So I was about 13, 14 years old, had my first band. At the same time as painting and being a musician, I was also an extremely keen footballer. So they were my three passions, football, art, being the band. And I pursued each one relentlessly, obsessively. But it's quite difficult trying to keep all three up because, you know, if you're supposed to be playing on a Saturday afternoon in a football game, you're also supposed to be in the back of a transit going up to Middlesbrough and trying to paint. Something had to give. So later on I was a student. I went to live in Brighton. Music took over. I was still doing football. Art seemed to take a little bit of a back seat. It was at that point, music was a much more sociable thing to do in terms of meeting people, getting out there, you know, doing all the things that we do when we're young. So when I got to about 24, 25, and the band I was in was doing okay. I mean, there's a guy called Hans Zimmer in my band. Who's film composer now, who I'm still in touch with. He's actually got about 7 of my paintings, so that's quite nice. So I'm still in touch with Hans. The drummer was a guy called Nigel Glockler, who ended up later on as the drummer in Saxon. And I can't remember the other guys. Anyway, I came to Dave Greenfield, who was the Stranglers keyboard player. He was in a band I was in. So in Brighton, it was a very creative place, and lots of these musicians there that went on to do great things. However, in my case, I was always the one that organised everything. I was the one that tried to hustle the gigs and tried to do this and that. And I think I got quite good at it. I was better at that than I was at trying to play the bass, which was my instrument, although I could play reasonably. So when I got to 24, 25, I thought, I'm not going to be a rock star. That's not my calling. I'm going to organise rock stars. So I set off, again with an obsession, to make my way in the music business, and got myself a job in London with a big production company, doing live production, sound, lights, PA, sound, lights, trucks, all that kind of stuff. And that was another eye opener for me. And I did quite well, I think. Obviously met a lot of people, a lot of, stars, not just rock stars or metal stars, but, other types of music as well. I've got a very diverse musical taste, and met some great people. Some of them I'm still in touch with now. Met a lot of people who I wouldn't want to meet again. You know, it's an egocentric filled universe, the music industry. And you know, I've worked with some of the biggest egomaniacs on the planet, and most of the time it's not very pleasant. Having said that, a lot of it's great. So I've got some very happy memories and everything. Got to a point in that journey when the last year I did that, I went back and forth to America 27 times.
Wow.
And all around Eastern Europe, Japan, with a particularly difficult client who I won't name. It was hell on earth. So no sooner I'd get back to London, where I was living at the time, the phone would go and somebody would say, "You better get back to New York. The drummer's jumped out the window," or something, you know, just stupid stuff. So I was just being pulled all over the place. And I thought, you know, I'd actually at that point lost my love of music, which is why I started to do it in the first place. And I thought, this is stupid. If I carry on doing this, I'm going to fall over and drop down dead. And, of course, people do fall over and drop down dead in the music business. This is a very taxing environment. So I thought, I'm going to have to somehow get my love back for music, maintain all my contacts, do the sort of, and just concentrate on the stuff that I like to do and forget everything else. So I thought, right, now, I'm just going to, was in a fortunate position, sort of done quite well with earning some money. And I was in demand as a consultant for other bands and people who wanted to know how to organize this or how to put an American tour together, all this other kind of stuff. So, you know, that kept the income going while I was able to spend a lot more time reteaching myself how to paint, because that was my first love. Too old at that point to be a footballer. Although, you know, in spirit, I would love to have been a footballer, but that wasn't for me. Just concentrated on teaching myself how to paint again. So I was in my head, I was still that 4-year-old boy, but of course I was a lot older. And off I went. And, of course, half my head's creative, but the other half is this sort of organizer type. So I started to organize stuff for myself, got myself out there, navigated upstream in the watercolor world, which is my preferred medium, and got to the point where I was being invited to shows all over the world to exhibit. And on those journeys, of course, I met a lot of other fantastic painters.
Well, that's a great transition back into your world of art there. In terms of the gold disc behind you, is that connected with the internationally recognised artist that you didn't want to discuss earlier? Or?
No. I had a few gold and silver discs and trophies from the road. When I moved back up to so I live in Shropshire now. So when I moved back up to the area from where I came from London, I had about 20 or 30 of those discs, and a lot of them went missing.
Oh, right.
So I've now got just, you know, a handful of things which I keep out of the way. They're in my little, you know, hideaway here in my office, but they're not in any other part of the house.
Yeah. David, tell us about the International Watercolour Masters this year.
Okay, a good question. And I'm happy to share information about the International Watercolour Masters exhibition, or IWM 2024, with your listeners.
Thank you.
I hope they're interested, and I hope many of them will travel to the show to see it in person. It will be amazing. So it's taking place at Lillishall Hall, which is in Shropshire. Postcode is TF109AT, and that, of course, is in England. It takes place from May the 15th to May the 24th. Open daily, 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. Admission is by advance ticket only, which is available from the IWM web, which is IWM2024.com. Go there. It will tell listeners all about the show, who's in it, where they're from, a little bit about their paintings. It will have a full schedule of who's on what days in terms of demonstrations. And, of course, people can buy tickets. That way we can control the numbers coming to the show, because the first two shows were so many people coming that it was a little bit uncomfortable. So this time we've had to charge so we can control the numbers, and also obviously help to pay for the show. It's not a great amount. It's only £10 to get in. It's not a lot. There are also group discounts for groups of 10 or more people, art clubs, art societies, anybody like that wants to come along. Everyone will get a very warm welcome from our very friendly IWM team, and everyone will be looked after. It will be a great day out. The demonstration schedule, there's two or three live demonstrations every single day throughout the show, the 10-day show run. They are included in with the price of the admission ticket, so there's lots of value for people coming. And, of course, the masters themselves, a lot of them will be there on hand to talk to people and explain about their work, if any of it needs explaining. It's additionally, Lillishall Hall is in glorious Shropshire countryside, and there are lots of other things to do. There are woodland walks, nature trails. There's a fantastic Italian garden. There's a cafe, a restaurant, a hotel, all the facilities and free parking. All the facilities are there for a great day out. And people can come and go into the show as many times as they want during the day, go out, refuel, come back in, see some more, go out, go for a nice walk, have a cream tea on the Lillishall Hall Terrace, which is a lovely historic building, and it will be fantastic.
It sounds like a fantastic time. I was curious, we mentioned earlier on about how you started art and everything, and we also mentioned that a lot of people let it go, or perhaps it's something that they fancy doing later in life. So sort of two questions on that. How suitable is the show for somebody sort of thinking they want to be a bit more inspired about learning to paint? And the second part of that is, what would you suggest to somebody who wants to learn to paint?
Okay. Everyone should want to learn to paint. And I think really the desire to draw, make marks, paint is in all of humanity, because let's face it, when we're little children, we like to pick things up and make marks with them, whether they're pencils, charcoal, or paints. It's just that later on, other life factors interfere and a lot of people lose their enthusiasm for painting. However, if you keep it up or come back to it, it's a very therapeutic thing to do. It's something you can do on your own. You don't have to have a group of people to do it, rely on people turning up. You could just get in a corner of a room, paint or draw yourself, and really get lost in the process and just thoroughly enjoy it. So with the show, the IWM show, it does feature the best exponents of watercolour painting in the world. These artists are true masters of the medium. As such, you won't see any wishy-washy watercolours at IWM. They are all museum quality pieces with fantastic depth, tonal range, and a vast array of subject material. There's something for people to look at, whatever their interests, and people will not fail to be inspired by what they see. Some of them, you wouldn't believe they are actually watercolour paintings, but they are all watercolour paintings. And it just shows you where you can get to if you persevere on your art journey. Wherever you are, whether you're just a beginner or you've done a little bit of painting before or are an expert, it doesn't matter. There's something in this show for you all. And it's just a great way of seeing the best in the world all in one place, and that's very rare. This show is unique to the UK. There's nothing else like it, and it's actually unique in Europe, if not the world. We will have the greatest quantity of masters and paintings in one place, and actually a lot of them, the masters themselves, are traveling to the show to give these demonstrations, lead workshops, and mix with the audience. So it's unique. It's not to be missed.
Well, it certainly sounds inspirational, and I guess as you said, for somebody who's sort of thinking about painting and everything, it's all under one roof. Just going on that bit that you were saying about painting on your own, would you, although it's solitary when you're actually doing the art, is there a sort of network or a camaraderie between artists that you find?
Well, when you start out, let's address this to people that are thinking of starting art or are just starting their journey. You won't ever feel alone, even though you are alone, when you're actually doing it yourself, because there are millions of people out in the world, all like you, all trying to make their way and enjoy their painting. Every town, village, and city has within it its own groups of artists that have formed together to form little societies, little art clubs, groups of people who will get together, share their vision and inspiration and art journey, and also put on little exhibitions in their villages, towns, or cities. And if you join one of these little groups, you'll find people just like yourself. Most people are nervous the first time they go. Don't be afraid. You're sure to get a warm welcome. Join in and take it as far as you can go. Get a painting in the local exhibition with your art group. And if you get people liking it, it gives you encouragement to carry on. Same thing, not to be missed really, is to share your work on Facebook. And that's something you can easily do, and it's free. And there's lots of groups on Facebook as well. One of the best groups to join is called Watercolour Alliance, That's a big Facebook group. It's got over 55,000 members from all over the world who've just signed up for Watercolour on Watercolour Alliance. That's also free. And you can put your painting on there and share it with all the other members of Watercolour Alliance. And if you're lucky, a lot of them will like it and say nice things about you, and that will encourage you to do another one.
Well, I think you've answered that very well, and certainly sounds like a really good opportunity to meet other people, exchange ideas, and grow as an artist, David. So where can people find out more about your work?
My personal work, they can look at my website. I've got a website. It's davidpoxon.co.uk, and on there you will find out a little bit more about me, my own journey. There'll be a gallery where you can look at my work, and you can also order my book on there, which is called Watercolour Heart and Soul. If you order on the website, you'll get a signed copy, and we send them all over the world. There's also a section for prints. If you don't want to buy an original painting, you can buy a print. Also, there's a website entirely dedicated to the International Watercolour Masters Show, and that is at internationalwatercolourmasters.com, or for short, IWM2024.com. Go on there, find out everything about the show, who's in it, where they're from. There's a full schedule of what's happening every day, and you can get tickets for the show there too. So between those two websites, my own personal website, and the IWM website, you can find out lots of things about watercolour painting, people's individual journeys, what's so great about it, and hopefully get you inspired to have a go yourself.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And I know the work that you're putting into getting this Watercolour Masters exhibition sorted out is obviously very extreme at the moment. Have you got any plan? What's your next project after this? A rest.
Good question. If I've got any brain space left, after IWM 2024, I might have a little holiday, and then I'll take stock of where I am and get my mojo back and enthusiasm and go on to the next challenge, which may be a solo show for me, maybe a new book, it may be a new online workshop course, and maybe I'll start thinking about IWM 2026.
So it's going to be every 2 years, I see.
Yeah, the actual IWM can only be every 2 years because it's such a big show with so much planning and organisation in it. The other thing is, to get the best artists in the world to the show, many of them plan their schedules are booked up for 2 years ahead. So,
Yeah. And one last question, really, going back to the creativity. When you're working on a particular painting, are you already thinking about what your next one's going to be? Or do you just wait for that inspiration once you finish that particular painting for the next one?
Well, that's a very good question. Some artists claim that they can work on more than one painting at a time. Personally, I've always found that very difficult, in fact, impossible. The problem is this: my paintings take days or weeks to complete. They're quite complex beings. There's lots of layers of paint on them. In order to do that, I have to maintain my own enthusiasm for that work and hang on to the first moments of inspiration that made me want to paint that particular subject or topic. If I then get interested in something, another subject, while I'm painting this one, I will forget about the one I'm painting on and go on to the next one. It's a bit like trying to maintain two relationships at the same time with a lady or a man or whatever. It's very complicated and probably impossible. And best avoided. Just have one relationship at a time and enjoy the love that you can share, not just with your partners, but with the painting that you're making on. let that painting take you on its complete journey. The painting will tell you when it's finished and it's time to go away, and then start to think about the next one.
That's fantastic. Thank you for that. This has been a really great conversation, David. I've certainly learned a lot more about art, and it's been fascinating listening to your sort of life stories of how you've got where you are in terms of the music business, the original art you did, getting back into it, and now the organization of everything, which is all sort of built up for you over the years. So that's really great to hear. My guest today has been David Poxon. David is an artist, author, course curator, and organizer of the International Watercolor Masters. And you can find a link to David's website and the show on the episode show notes. Thank you for coming on the show, David.
And thank you very much, Bob, for having me. And my best wishes to all your wonderful listeners all over the world. Hope to see you at IWM 2024.
You will. Thank you. I really hope you enjoyed today's show and got something out of it. And I would like to ask a favour. If you think some of your friends and family would enjoy the episode, please share the link with them. Really appreciate this. It helps the show grow by spreading the word, and we look forward to bringing you more Undercurrent stories. Thank you.